Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, ciao, bonjour, namaste, jumbo. Hello and welcome. My name is Jed Lee and this is Reading with Your Kids, coming to you with love from the historic neighborhood of Readville, tucked into the southwest corner of beautiful Boston, Massachusetts. Our mission here is all about connection, connecting kids with books, families with each other, and communities through the power of story. Every week, we're joined by incredible authors and creators whose work lights up kids' lives. You can support this mission by spreading the word. Share the show with your friends. Give us a shout-out at school and let folks know that they can hear us on the WREB AM-FM 24-7 radio network. And they can find us on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, YouTube, Good Pods, CastBox, Audible, Player FM. Pretty much wherever you find your favorite shows, you can find Reading with Your Kids. This is an incredibly fun episode. We've been having so much fun. Adam Wallace is joining us from Melbourne in Australia. He is here to celebrate his graphic novel, Hat Man, and also his new picture book, Turkey in Disguise. And later in the show, June Smalls returns to celebrate Digging for Dinosaurs. This episode of Reading with Your Kids is brought to you by Careful What You Hear, a wonderful middle grade novel by Helen Dunlop Newton. Noah Baker is not an average 13-year-old. He's a mind-reading secret agent. Ever since a mix-up gave him an experimental cochlear implant, he and his partner Lena have been going on spying missions for the government. Now they're in for a reward for all of their hard work, space camp. Their fun threatens to melt away when Noah overhears thoughts revealing a plot to steal secret plans from nearby Redstone Arsenal. Should Noah report what he heard and risk losing a chance to compete in the end-of-camp mission with Lena? Or should he keep quiet and risk bad people winning again? Careful What You Hear is the sequel to Helen's very popular Do You Hear What I Hear? Get your copy today. You and your kids are going to love it. Careful What You Hear by Helen Dunlop Newton. Join us right now from Melbourne in the wonderful nation of Australia. Our guest is here today to celebrate his full-color, middle-grade, chapter book, graphic novel, action, adventure, superhero, comedy, musical, and a lot of other stuff. It's called Hat Man. Please welcome to the show, Adam Wallace. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing great. Oh, pardon my voice going cracky. I'm doing great, Jed. great to see you and speak to you.
Yeah, Adam and I actually were in the same space last year and didn't talk to each other. We didn't meet. We met lots
of times. We avoided each other.
Isn't that weird? We're living in a world today where we're at the same conference. There's a lot of people, but it's like maybe a couple hundred. We're not talking tens of thousands. And we don't get a chance to meet, but we finally connect thousands of miles away from you. You're on the other side of the world.
Exactly. Not just the other side of the world, but I'm in tomorrow for you as well.
Gee, you took the joke. I said, I'm not going to do that dumb joke today.
You got to do it. I'm in the future.
I got to get the lottery numbers for you from you after.
Exactly.
So let's talk about Hat Man. I saw a couple of videos. It seems like a lot of fun.
It's been so much fun, Jed. I've been doing this for over 20 years now. So my first book, I self-published, came out at the end of 2004, so 21 years ago, almost to the day. It was in September. And I've written over 4,000 stories. I've done 180 books. And this has been the most fun I've ever had creating a book. Like, it's been 2 years of just a bit of an obsession, but also just this joyous thing because, yeah, I mean, I wrote the story, obviously, and then it's got a graphic novel sections, and one of my best friends, who's one of Australia's top illustrators, did the pictures, so seeing them come to life was amazing. And then it's got songs in it as well. So I wrote the lyrics, but then a friend of mine created all the music, and then we got people to sing the songs, and it's just been this awesome, awesome experience.
Now, I'm guessing that this isn't like the board books where you push a button on the page and it and the song plays. How do the kids experience the music?
Yeah, so it's slightly different to that because I didn't want the bulkiness of that. I wanted it to just be like you get a book, you got the book and that's it, and didn't need batteries, all that sort of stuff, couldn't wear out. So basically you read it as normal, it gets to a section where there's going to be a graphic novel, and then there's a QR code. So you scan the QR code with your iPad or phone, or I don't know if you can scan QR codes with a computer webcam. I've got to look into that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that last night. I had a tax bill I had to pay. So.
Well, this is much more fun than a tax bill because when you scan the QR code, it goes to a video and the video plays the song, but then there's like a music video, which is the frames from the graphic novel section of the book. So you can sort of watch along, or you can just read along in the book as it plays, or you can do it without the songs. It kind of works all the ways, but the songs just add that something a little bit different. And for me, that was a really nice challenge and has just made it so exciting.
That's fantastic. So who is Hatman?
Who is Hatman? Oh, so I am Hatman because okay. I have about 30 something hats. I just collect hats. This hat I'm wearing now, I don't know if who's going to see the video or anything, but this hat is from New York City. I bought this and basically Hatman is also Harvey West. It's a town where everyone's a bit scared to go on the streets. There's Mr. Bigwig. He rules the streets. There's gangs of evil cats. There's crooks. There's all this stuff going on. And Harvey West is the most scared of all, but he has his hat collection is his main thing. He ends up getting a hat that's kind of magic. And so when he puts on that hat, he just has to wear it once. Then all his hats get this magic. So if he puts on a cowboy hat, he actually transforms into this rough, tough cowboy with a horse. He puts on an astronaut helmet. He gets all the skills of what he put the hat on. He puts on a baby's bonnet. He's a baby with a dirty, we say nappy, you say diaper, but yep. It's dirty, whatever it is. And so he transforms into that. So he becomes this hero, but he's like a million different heroes. So he can't wear the same hat more than one night in a row. So he's a different hero every night, and he becomes like, there's a policeman hat man, a cowboy hat man. There's even an old man hat man who just tells really boring stories and about mashed corn he ate in 1923 and stuff like that. And the crooks just get bored they just run to jail.
I love it. What inspired all the different genres, putting them into one story?
Well, Hatman itself was inspired. A friend of mine saw me and she's like, you should be called Hatman because you wear hats all the time. And I just got this idea of a bit like Batman when he pulls the crook close and the crook's like, who are you? And he's like, I'm Hatman. And the crook's like, you're Batman. He's like, no, I'm Hatman. So it started there. So I knew I was going to be a superhero. And then I generally, pretty much everything I write, even if it's an instructional book on how to draw, whatever it is, I love to bring in humor. So it was always going to have a bit of comedy to it as well. And then the superhero thing just gives us the action. Look, pretty much when I write, I start writing and I see what comes out. And it all kind of came out as I started. I didn't even know it was going to be a musical to start with. Just on the first page, he started singing a little advertisement. I'm like, this is a musical. And it kind of flowed from there.
I love it. I know that you do lots of school visits. And yep. Just, you know, meeting you and spending a little bit of time with you, I feel the energy. You know, I made a living doing school visits myself for four decades or so. And isn't it the best? Just being
it's the best.
In front of kids.
Oh, there's when you're talking to a group of kids and they're really into it and I'm really into it and we kind of bounce off each other. And I like to make my visits really interactive as well. So they're giving ideas, I'm giving ideas, we're sort of, all working together. It just gets this flow and this buzz. I leave and I'm buzzing for the rest of the day after that because kids have this amazing imagination and kind of no filter. Like as we get older, sometimes we'll think of an idea and we're like, oh, I don't know if it's good enough or not. I don't know if I'll say it. Kids are just like, I'm going to say this right now. And it's usually hilarious or insightful or just really creative. So yeah, I really love that. I mean, you talk about energy. I love the energy of kids, especially my favorite. I actually like all grades, but probably my favorite is about like second to fourth grade. There's something about that level that, they've got that enthusiasm. They get stuff and they're just prepared to like just play a fair bit.
Yeah. That's the age group I love, but I also love I did a lot of work in inner cities around the United States, and I loved going to the middle schools. And there are literally middle schools here in the United States where the kids are escorted, classrooms are escorted to different activities with a police officer in the front of them and one in the back of the line. And I love being at those places because in the first 5 minutes, you just get them to turn into kids again.
Yeah.
You know, they just forget about all the nonsense and the security and trying to pose and act like a tough guy.
Too cool. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to laugh at this goofy guy.
Yeah, I love that. And that age, if you can get them to act like kids, again, they've got just that next level of intuitiveness, I guess, or something like that. Just, again, they get stuff really well, but they've got really great ideas, but sometimes they are a bit too cool to say them. If you can get them saying them, then you can go anywhere. It just opens up this whole range of ideas you can explore.
Yeah, yeah. It is a lot of fun, and it's a lot different than sitting on the stage with your book, reading the book upside down.
Which I've done before as well. So are you still doing school visits now?
I'm not marketing the show, although – I have a new project, and I think I'm going to promote the new project through school visits. So I think we're going to get back on the road. But I do a lot of work. I had the pleasure of touring El Salvador with a group called Clowns Without Borders. And that is a group that sends clowns into refugee camps, disaster areas, and other places. In El Salvador, we're performing for folks who had been internally displaced and experienced violence for decades.
Wow.
So that was an amazing experience.
Isn't it incredible? And how, I mean, people often look at things like comedy and clowning and almost brush it off a little bit and say, oh, you know, it's just like silly stuff. But it's life-changing. I mean, kids especially who have been in these really hard situations, to get a smile out of them, let alone a laugh or get them to play, it can be life-changing for these kids and just make them see there's a bit of hope.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what we experienced. That's what we were looking for. And it's amazing for groups like that. I was touring with these two incredible, young, talented clowns. And so when we'd introduce them, they'd do a cartwheel and the other one would do a backflip. And then they'd introduce me, and I'm almost 100, so all I could do is turn around and shake my butt. But something simple like that, it gets a huge laugh.
100%. And it gets a different type of laugh. Like with the backflips, like, whoa. But then with that, they're like, yeah. So, yeah, it's amazing. And I mean, I'd love to see you try and do a backflip. That would be pretty cool.
No. I missed a step going down a set of stairs a couple of years back and ended up in the hospital for 3 months. So we're not flipping or falling or doing anything else.
Well, they'd definitely be falling if you tried to flip.
Absolutely. We also wanted to talk about Turkey in Disguise. Tell us about that book.
So Turkey in Disguise, it's based around a Thanksgiving activity that I hadn't heard of myself, because in Australia we don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. I've been to a couple of Thanksgiving dinners. My godsister lived in America for a while, married an American, came back to Australia, so she put on a couple of Thanksgiving dinners. So it was really cool to kind of find out that tradition and see how, like, hear all about it and eat all the food and have a nap afterwards because we'd eaten so much, and that was great. But yeah, Turkey in Disguise, not Thanksgiving in Disguise, it's an activity that's done in classrooms over there, in a lot of classrooms, especially the younger kids, where they want to protect the turkey from Thanksgiving, right? So that's a little picture of a turkey, and they, you know, add disguises to it so no one will know it's the turkey. There's a, you know, might be Santa Claus. And I looked on Pinterest, and there's all these amazing disguises that kids have done. So we've done a little rhyming story, and it's actually got that project in the back as well. You can tear it out and disguise the turkey. About a turkey who, we didn't want to do the Thanksgiving dinner. We thought that might not be great. Trying to avoid Thanksgiving dinner. But it's about a turkey going to a costume party and thinks that she looks boring. And so she's going to dress up in all these costumes and try and make herself more fantastic than she thinks she is. So it's about her kind of discovering with her friend's help that, you know, she's pretty cool the way she is. But the disguises were super fun, like the different disguises. She's a zombie turkey at one point. And this is the thing again about writing. When I start writing, I know where it's going to finish. I know where I'm starting, but in between, whatever kind of pops into my head pops. So at one time she disguises herself as a park bench, and Mike Moran, the illustrator, he didn't draw her as a he literally just drew a park bench. Like, it's the ultimate perfect disguise. It's awesome.
You know, it's, you remind me of a time I actually performed at a big music festival, and the promoter came up to me and he said, "You're going to open up the show." And I said, "Wow." And he, on the main stage, great. And this is a baseball stadium. And I walk out on that main stage and I look out and, and there are 5,000 people disguised as empty seats.
And, and they did it really well.
They did it really well.
That is so good.
It was great. It was raining, and everybody was huddled underneath the whatever. But so I just chased them. I just went up into the stands and dragged them down into the rain. It was a lot of fun.
Love it. And they probably had the best time. Like, we do that with things like rain, don't we? Like, oh, we can't get wet. But if you're out there, I heard a great saying, or was it, when it's raining, some people get wet, some people dance in the rain. And we have a choice, right? We can you know, get upset about it, or we can just have fun.
Yeah. I was in touring Puerto Rico one year, and they had been in the middle of a drought, and it was really bad, and they had to ration water, and they're setting up my stage outside. And I said to the principal of the school, I said, "What happens if it rains?" And she laughed at me. And she said, "It hasn't rained here in months." And sure enough, halfway through the show, the heavens opened up. And it was like the entire Caribbean Ocean dropped down on us. And the kids are up and they're dancing.
Oh, they would have.
And it was great. And they just said, "Keep doing your show." And I, okay, let's do it.
And that's the thing again with kids, right? They're just like, this is the best thing ever.
Yes, everybody. We had a great, great time. And
I love it.
You know, I think that this is something we can, as parents, we should share with our kids. That's that idea of, hey, this is what life is throwing at us right now. And we have a choice as to how we deal with it. Do we deal with it glum and gloomy and complain, or do we just say, okay, let's make this happy?
Yeah, definitely. I have a theory that, well, not my theory, but I've read a lot of sort of stuff around this, and the old Zen philosophies of nothing's good or bad, right? Like, something happens. We are the ones who put our own sort of ideas in it of, oh, it's raining, that's a terrible thing. Oh, it's raining, that's an awesome thing. The rain is the same. It's just how we react to it. So I agree. It's such an opportunity to be like, well, this is so cool. Let's go slide in the mud, or let's go run around or dance or whatever it is. Or just let's stay inside and look at the rain and just feel really safe and warm and cozy. And it's still a really great thing.
Yeah. I love that. And that's one of the neat things about books, when we're reading with our kids, whether it's that Hat Man or Turkey in Disguise, these little nuggets of wisdom, we can share them. We just drop them into the story. You know, we see something happening, and it's like, hey, you know, that kid could have done this, but he chose to do that. And I think it's a great way to just help our kids acquire that wisdom that we hope that they get.
Yeah. And when you're writing it, I guess to not force it, but just, you know, it's the character experiences this particular thing and reacts a certain way. And sometimes it's easier for kids, and probably adults as well, to talk about a character in a book doing something rather than talking about themselves experiencing something. And so, again, a bit like that clowning thing we were talking about before, like, books have that ability to, there's so much more than just a book, like, and you can do a little silly book. But even that, like, it can inspire a kid to be creative, or it can inspire a kid to laugh, or it can inspire a kid to write their own story. Or so even that something seemingly just a bit almost pointless, I think some people think sometimes, can actually change someone's life.
Yeah. Do you think about that? I'm imagining you when you're writing, just having that same energy that you have on stage, and that we're seeing and hearing from you now. Are you there, and the ideas are coming, and you're writing them down and kind of bouncing off the walls as these ideas come?
Yep, pretty much. Yep. It's it doesn't slow down much here. My mom is actually here at the moment, and she stayed last night, and we were chatting about that, how almost if I'm sitting down being, I do meditate and things like that, but if I'm sitting doing nothing, that's when I'm restless. Whereas if I'm actually doing stuff, that's when I am more relaxed. And so, yeah, so when I'm writing, it's like giving a school visit. If I'm at a school and I'm doing four sessions, I think the first session and the fourth session and in between as well should get my same energy. Mm-hmm. And I think the first session should get 120%. So I'm just not pacing myself. I'm just going 120%. Right. And same with writing. I just think the energy I write with goes into the story and it can then somehow come out to the reader as well.
Yeah.
That they're not just experiencing the story, but they're experiencing my experience of the story. And I love it. Like I love writing stuff when I start laughing and I'm like, oh, if that's happening and I'm laughing writing it, that's a really good sign. Or if I get chills or if I get sad or whatever it might be. And I mean, Hat Man is an example where I've been working on it for, well, actually 14 years, but the musical version for 2 years. And it's probably 50 or 60 different drafts of it, of mm-hmm. edits and changes and everything else. The songs have been through about 10 or 15 drafts each. And I still read it and still laugh and still get excited. I hear the songs and I'm still pumped. I'm like, that's really cool. That means I think that it's something that I've really enjoyed. And I think if we're doing something that we love doing, like writing or sport or chess or dancing, whatever it might be for people, if you do it and you don't enjoy it, I kind of think, what's the point? Like, you've got to do stuff that you love doing, right? And so, when you're a kid, you're trying different things. And so you work out what you like and don't like. And again, even as adults, but yeah, I think if I've chosen writing and it's something I'm like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life, but I'm doing it going, oh, this is hard work. This is blah, blah, blah. I think I may as well get a job doing some, I don't know, like I used to be an engineer, just tapping away at the computer. And like, I may as well just get that job. Like, I want to do something that actually lights me up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Have you thought about or planning on turning Hat Man, the graphic novel, action adventure, superhero comedy musical, into an actual live musical on stage?
Jed, I have thought about it every day. Not just that, but a movie as well. Like I've written a script for the movie. So yeah, I would love to turn it into that. And yeah, musical would be unreal. So Drew, who did the music, he actually creates musicals for schools, mm-hmm. and he does school songs and things like that as well. And he does professional musicals. So he's pretty amazing. And he's really keen to turn it into a musical as well. So he goes, oh, okay, we need to add a couple more songs if it's actually on stage. So I thought about where the songs could be, and I've blocked out where the actors will go in this song as I was writing it. So yeah, we're all kind of thinking about that side of things, because I think it would translate really well to both, to screen and to stage. I always say page, stage, and screen. That's what that's right for Hat Man.
That's fantastic. You mentioned earlier that you've written 170, 190 books or so. Do you ever sit down in your library and look and say, I wrote that book?
Yes. Not just that. I'll sometimes, if I'm reading one of my books, and I'll read a line, I'm like, I wrote that line? That's actually pretty good. Like, sometimes it surprises me. I'm like, where did that come from? And I remember one book I wrote called The Share or Not, and I sort of wrote it in my mind that I wanted it to be my Dr. Seuss kind of book. So that really, a sort of similar rhyming style, but and a bit of a nice message. And I remember reading it back one time. I'm like, that line feels so familiar. I thought that maybe I'd unintentionally stolen it from an actual Dr. Seuss story. So I Googled the line. I wrote in Dr. Seuss. I read Dr. Seuss books, and it didn't come up anywhere. I'm like, I think I actually just made it up myself, but it feels like Dr. Seuss. This is like the greatest moment of my life. So yeah, definitely. And I still get the same thrill now, like just seeing a book on the shelves, on a bookshelf in a shop or in a kid's bookshelf. I still get the thrill now that I got 20 years ago. It's still just as exciting to see it, because every book's got a different journey to get there, and it has a different journey after it's been published. And sometimes even books that, from a publisher's point of view or a world point of view, haven't necessarily gone as well as they'd hoped, or from my point of view, so haven't maybe sold as many as they hoped. But then I'll get an email from a parent or from a child saying, oh, I just loved your book. I'm like, that book's won, right? Yeah. That book succeeded already. And even just getting it done, is that there's there's so many moments of success when you're writing. There's actually starting a story, because a lot of people have ideas but don't start the story. There's then finishing the story as a success. There's having fun with it and making it the best book you can is a success. If it gets picked up by a publisher, that's a success. There's all these different moments, but a lot of people focus on the final one. Right. Did it sell this many copies? If it didn't, it's a failure. It's like, no, there's like 10 successes all the way along. And even in that supposed failure, again, what's good or bad, even in that supposed failure, it could be one kid's favorite book that who knows what path that sets them on. And so again, as with no good or bad, I think there's almost no successes or failures unless you, again, for me, if I'm writing a book going, oh, this is the worst thing ever, I hate doing this, that feels like a failure to me. Because I'm like, do something you enjoy. Stop whinging about it. Get out there.
Yeah. Now, Turkey in Disguise is a traditionally published book, but I know that you've had a huge success in the indie world. You and I were speaking at the Indie Authors Summit last summer when we didn't meet and avoided each other. Can you talk a little bit about the success you had in the indie world? And just share, because it's pretty amazing what you're able to achieve.
Yeah, it's been really cool. And one of those things that was kind of forced on me a little bit at the start, because I submitted to, I think it was over 150 times, sometimes to the same publisher multiple times, but 150 times I got rejected for my stories from publishers that weren't going to publish them. I was telling someone about it the other day. I was telling a group of kids about it, where one time the publisher said, oh, look, we like the story, but there was a narrator. But the narrator is actually, we find it really annoying. So if we were going to take it, you'd need to take the narrator out. That narrator was based on me. It was me that they found annoying. Like, ugh. So it got to the point where I just felt like I wasn't going to get picked up by a publisher, but I was working in a school in a before and aftercare and reading my stuff to the kids, and it was going really well. And even if kids know you, they're not polite. Like, if they like it, they'll tell you. If they don't like it, they'll tell you. I mean, they can be polite the way they say it, but they'll be really honest, which is what we need. We don't want people saying they like it if they don't. And so kids will like it, they'll tell you. So they were really liking it. So I thought, I'm just going to self-publish one and just see. I want a book. I want it to happen. I'm not even thinking of it as a career at this point. And so I borrowed some money off my parents and self-published it. No Amazon print on demand in those days. I had to get them printed and sent to my house and go out to schools and markets to sell them. And they sold pretty quick. And I'm like, oh, actually, maybe this could be something. And that sort of, so for the first, five or six or seven years of my writing career, I was just self-published and then slowly started to get contacts with publishers and being able to get books published through them as my writing got better, I think. And as I got as I got out there and showed that I was willing to do the work and put it out there and show initiative, and then I could also I could apply to publishers saying, I wrote this book and I've sold 5,000 copies of it. Are you interested in that or something else? And so suddenly I'm a bit more legitimate, I guess. And so did that, but I still self-published. So Hat Man is one I'm self-publishing as well. And so I've gone back to it after a little gap from pre-COVID. And I like the freedom of self-publishing. I mean, you've got to do everything yourself pretty much, right? Like it's on you. I'm the publisher, the this, the that, and everything. And so, which I kind of love that too. I love the challenge of going, all right, I've written the book. Now, and so Hat Man, I've ordered 5,000 copies and they're in my garage, they're in my spare room, they're under the bench, they're everywhere. Okay, I've got to get them out now. I've got to somehow find a way to get these into kids' hands. So I love the challenge, but yeah, it's been great. It's been a great, it was a great base to start my writing career from. And it's really nice doing both, having some self-published, some traditionally published, and there's pros and cons to both. And just, again, just finding the best out of each one and having fun with it, and the rest kind of take care of itself.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I'm hearing from you is the ambition. And we have a lot of aspiring authors here that listen to the show. And I think with anything, you know, if you go into it and you have a positive attitude and you just, you know, tell yourself, I'm going to do everything I can to make this a success, it's going to happen for you.
I agree. And it happens on different levels. And, you know, and for me, I've had some books that have sold 500 copies and some books that have sold a million copies. So it happens all these different levels. But again, even those 500 have been, at the time they came out, 500 felt like a million because I hadn't sold any. So it was like, here's some kids actually who I don't even know are actually getting the book. And that's kind of great as well. And yeah, I think, and having that ambition, like I look at it where I do these different things as success, but at the same time, I want to be the best author that's ever written books in the history of the world. Like I want to do that. I want to aim high as well. And I want my books to be movies, but sort of, yeah, you look at the, I never know. They say like the macro and the micro. The micro is the small, I guess, and the macro is the big.
I get those confused myself. I just pretend I get, what they're talking about.
Me too. The small. Oh yeah, macro. Yeah. But I see that. Like I like the big targets, but I set little targets along the way as well. So I'm ambitious on a large scale, but also on small scale as well.
Yeah. I love it. We should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about Hatman, find out more about Turkey in Disguise, and find out more about Adam Wallace.
Amazing. Well, so Hatman, there's a website, hatman.com.au, which is probably the easiest one. And it's, I just put it up now. It's actually not out till October, here in Australia, but I've just put it up on Amazon. So it'll be available to find on Amazon as well. Then myself there, I've got my website, adam-wallace-books.com, where the dash is like a little hyphen-y. I don't even know what to call it, like a minus sign. Yeah. I say dash and some people go, is that down the bottom? I'm like, no, that's an underscore. And so adam-wallace-books.com. And Turkey in Disguise is going to be like basically where books are sold. It's coming out in the States, obviously, for Thanksgiving. And I was speaking to the publisher and they're like, well, you know, if the bookstores don't have it, if you ask, they'll be able to order it in. And libraries as well. And I should mention libraries. I think it's the same over there, but we love libraries over here. And especially when some people at the moment don't have as much money, libraries are amazing for people to be able to still go and come out with 10 books, right? And go home and read these books.
Yeah. You know, one of my favorite places to perform was a library here in Boston. And what they had done is they had taken an apartment in a housing project, so low income housing. They took an apartment and they turned that into the library.
Whoa.
It was an oasis for kids in that housing project. It was a place for them to go to read a book, to do their homework, to be away from whatever violence might have been happening.
Yeah.
It was the most difficult place I performed because it was tiny and all these bookcases and everything. But it was also fun because it was always a challenge in the kids. There was so much energy, like we had talked about earlier. It was just so a blast.
I got little chills down my spine when you're telling that. That's so lovely. And I think libraries are amazing. They are a safe space. Even in schools, school libraries are often a safe space for kids just who don't want to be out running around playing sport. They want to just sit and read or do their homework, whatever it is, and that's somewhere they can go and be able to do it. They're really important.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a great time speaking to the author of Hat Man and Turkey in Disguise and a couple hundred other wonderful books. Our guest has been Adam Wallace. Hey, Adam, thanks so much for being on Reading With Your Kids.
Thank you, Jed. It's been such a blast. It's been awesome.
This episode of Reading With Your Kids is brought to you by Once Upon a Dance. Books that move you. Literally, these books move you. Once Upon a Dance turns story time into a dance-along adventure. Build confidence, create connection, and enjoy screen-free fun. With over 60 awards and 3,000 five-star reviews, these interactive tales inspire kids to jump, twirl, and imagine. Find your next adventure at onceuponadance.com. They're available wherever books are sold, and I'm going to tell you, these books are absolutely fantastic. They're bright, the colors are vibrant, the stories are fun, the artwork is amazing. You kids are going to love it. You're going to love it. onceuponadance.com. Join us right now from the great state of Virginia. Our guest is returning to Reading With Your Kids to celebrate her new picture book. It's called Digging for Dinosaurs. Please welcome back to the show, June Smalls. Hey, June, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Delighted to have you on. I was preparing for this and digging for dinosaurs. So we're digging for these great big creatures. And in the past, you were here to celebrate She Leads about great big elephants. And I just find it a little ironic that June Smalls is writing about these giant animals.
Well, the world is a great big place, and there's too many things that you just they're out there to discover. Mm-hmm. But there's small dinosaurs, too. Don't let them fool you.
Okay, okay. And the evidence that we're finding starts off small. We have to put it together to make it big.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there are two books in the Digging for Dinosaurs series. Is that right?
There's two books out currently, and a third book is coming out this December. So there's Digging for Dinosaurs, which is the traditional desert area that you're used to seeing in all the movies. Then Digging for Dinosaurs at the Beach, kind of inspired by the Jurassic Coast where she sells seashells comes from. I can never say that right. And then the third one will be Digging for Dinosaurs Beneath the Streets. And that's when we discover things when we're digging up subways and underground utilities. And then we come across an amazing dinosaur.
Yeah, cool. So what inspired you to start this series?
So this was inspired years ago by my niece when she was like 4 years old. Her father, my brother, is a relic hunter, so he goes out and looks for Civil War artifacts. And she came up to me, sauntered up, and said, when I turn 5, I get to go digging in the dirt. And I said, what are you going to find in the dirt? And she said, history. And then she ran off and did a cartwheel and never mentioned it again. So she was able to encompass archaeology, paleontology, all of that into two sentences, and she fully understood history can be found in the dirt. And I wrote it Digging in the Dirt on a post-it, and she's in college now, so it took a while for these books to come out.
Well, we know a lot of people think, you know, a 32-page kids book, you can knock that out in a weekend. But the reality is it takes a lot of marinating and a lot of teamwork, and it takes some time to get a book out.
It does. And these are actually, these Lift the Flap books are only, I want to say, 8 or 10 spreads.
Okay.
So they're even smaller than your average picture book. But with the Lift the Flap interactive thing, the children get to actually dig and search for each item that they find.
You know, your niece would have loved to hang out in our backyard. We are here in Boston, but we're as far away from downtown as you can be and still be within the city of Boston. And our neighborhood is very historic. It had been a training base for the U.S. Army during the Civil War. In fact, it was the home of the Massachusetts 54th, the first all-black infantry regiment in the Civil War. And the parade ground was two blocks that way down the street. And there's a nice little playground there with some monuments and whatnot. But my property was the landfill for the soldiers. And
but that's amazing. That's fire pits and trash pits are where you find all the stuff.
Yep. We've had, and we didn't intentionally dig, except when we needed to plant a tree or whatnot, but all sorts of things have come up through the ground over the years. And so we have, most of the things were broken. We have a collection of little bottles that have come up through the ground over the years, and my wife plants little flowers in them and whatnot, and it's really cute.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so history is right there in your own backyard.
Yes, absolutely. And we've made some history here too, but we'll keep that quiet. And you've been writing for a while. How many books do you have out now, June?
Ooh, these might be books 12 and 13 or 13 and 14. I've got a dozen that are out there, and I've got a few more coming down the pike in the next, 2 years.
Did you, when you were talking to your niece, did you ever think that, when this book gets out there and I'm back on Reading With Your Kids, I'm going to be celebrating my 12th, my 13th book?
No, absolutely not. That was so many years ago. When I first started, maybe back in 2013, it was just a hope and a dream, and maybe someday I'll be published. And I've come a long way and struggled and cried and did it all, but got there.
Yeah, awesome. So you've obviously done some research on this. What was the most interesting dinosaur that we discovered as we were digging under the ground?
I think sometimes it's a common dinosaur, but it's the most interesting discovery. So I got to find out that in California, when they're digging for digging up new subways, and there was a college, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but they found a Tyrannosaurus, or no, not Tyrannosaurus, a Triceratops. And I think they even made their mascot become the Triceratops, because as they were unearthing for the school and the football fields, they found dinosaurs unexpectedly. And so I think those surprises are the ones that are the, I don't know, the coolest things that we find.
A Triceratops underneath a future football field, that's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. That was one of my favorite. I had a couple of favorite dinosaurs when I was growing up. One was the Stegosaurus. That was my favorite. But the Triceratops was definitely in the first, you know, the upper level of my fandom.
Well, then you should definitely read the first book.
Okay. Tell me about it.
Well, in the book, you start digging, and just like in real paleontology, sometimes you find junk. So you start unearthing and you find a coin or a key, man-made objects that are closer to the surface. And then as you get a little deeper and you get further in the book, and sometimes you accidentally come across bugs or critters, and then you find some fossils. And then as you get further and further along, eventually you get a bigger shovel. And in the first book, one of your favorites is the one that you discover there. So the Triceratops.
That's awesome. And I like the flip version that you have all these flip-flaps. I don't know if that's the technical term for it.
Sounds technical enough.
There you go. Because those are the books, especially when my kids were younger, that they got to manipulate. You know, it wasn't just me holding the book, turning the pages, reading the words. It was like, okay, well, now it's time. What are we going to find underneath there? And that whole anticipation and talking about it. So what do you think is there? And I think those kind of conversations where you're asking your kids to think, and not only think, but to share your ideas and show them that you're interested in their ideas. I think that can be, as we say here in Boston, I think that can be wicked empowering.
I love it. And it is wicked empowering, because even in this, they're physically doing the lifting. They're physically doing the digging and unearthing what's hidden beneath. So they're actually called seek and peek books. So, you know, the kids, doesn't matter how small they are, can discover something with no help from the adults. They can lift that flap all on their own. And yeah, and just to get that curiosity built, and then for them to be able to physically interact with the book, makes them more engaged.
Yeah. Now I'm interested. We've talked a lot here on the podcast about the process of how books are created, and how with traditionally published books, there's very little collaboration between the illustrator and the author. And I'm wondering, the idea of the peek and seek, was that your idea? Did you create the book with that intention, or was that something an editor or an art director might have said, we can turn this into?
No, from the beginning, because I wanted that element of curiosity and that element of discovery. And because when my daughter was little, oh my gosh, we had to read, you know, Where is Spot 1001 times. And she loved those lift the flaps. And I was like, that is the perfect, you're digging for dinosaurs, you're lifting it. So from the beginning, you know, even in the manuscript, I just had little brackets that said, you know, dig, 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 bracket, flap. And then, you know, whatever word, you know, eek, bugs under the flap. So I planned that from the beginning, but it definitely did have a lot more back and forth between me, the editor, the art director, and the illustrator, because we had to work around that physical structure of the flaps. So there might have been a question to me like, can we flip these two because we want the bigger flap on this page? We're going to keep the flaps the same size in each book for, you know, cost effectiveness. So while I didn't work directly with the illustrator at any point, there was a lot more back and forth to fit that format.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious that because of the added cost of making the flaps and whatnot, did that make it more difficult to sell the idea?
probably. So I had pitched it around a little bit and got no takers. And then when I sent it to Sourcebooks, the next email was, hey, we're going to acquisitions. They had a vision for it right away. So while a novelty book can be more expensive and therefore maybe a harder sell, all it takes is the right fit. It was exactly the type of educational yet fun thing that they were looking for.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Wow. What's next? I know the next Digging for Dinosaurs is coming out, but what other projects are you working on?
So a different type of novelty book I have coming out next year is Hear Them Sing, and it's about 14 songbirds in North America, and it actually has a soundboard so that you can hear and identify the sound. So it's pretty much a beginning field guide to bird watching with 14 common birds from North America.
Oh, cool. That sounds like a lot of fun. And that sounds like when my kids were really young, I know it was intentional because I tended to be a loud person. And so I think to get back at me, lots of people gave my kids loud, noisy toys.
I think it's just fun to give anybody with kids noisy toys, and then those batteries mysteriously die.
Indeed they do. Indeed they do. Tell me, have you taken the time to sit back and think about all the thousands of families that have snuggled up on the couch reading your books?
Sometimes that's hard to wrap my brain around, especially like we've sold foreign rights, and then I get an email that Digging for Dinosaurs had its UK debut. And it's weird and wonderful to think about kids everywhere and around the world seeing art that you made sitting in your basement, clinking away at a computer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's also weird to me to get an email and say, oh, by the way, your book is now in the United Kingdom. You're like, wait a minute, no one asked me if I wanted that. But of course you
would. Oh, of course, especially because over there they have some of, you know, the oldest discovered fossils and the beginning of that interest in fossils and paleontology. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, you have you love these big animals and you seem fascinated by it. Why do you think kids are fascinated by dinosaurs and elephants and all these huge creatures?
Because it's outside of the everyday, but everything can be fascinating if you're looking at it the right way. I mean, a kid can pick up a tiny rock with little flecks of color in it and be fascinated. Mm-hmm. I think it's about whatever interesting way we present it. I mean, I went fossil hunting because when writing these books, I was like, I want to see if there's anywhere I can do it. And there was a museum that you could actually go out to Calvert Cliffs in Maryland and dig at the beach as the cliffs nearby are crumbling into the ocean. They're giving away fossils pretty much. And I found the itty bittiest fossilized teeth and dolphin bones, but I discovered them myself and they were fascinating and exciting. So, I mean, a dinosaur is something big and you don't see it in your day to day, especially not today when we're looking at everything on a tiny 4-inch screen from our pocket. But anything that is bigger than we can hold in our mind in that moment, I think can be exciting and fascinating to a kid.
Yeah. Well, an adult, I remember my beautiful wife and I were down in the Panama Canal taking a cruise in the canal. And we were in this little motorboat with maybe five or six other people. And we passed this ginormous cargo ship that had to be 4 football fields long. And it was mind-boggling. And I felt like I was 5 years old again looking at this giant thing.
Yeah, I was kind of the same way recently around here. There was a truck. Touch a truck event, and we drove past, and I saw these giant backhoes and excavators. And yeah, I was a little kid again. I was like, I want to go and push the buttons in the giant truck because it makes you feel tiny and reminds you, I think, about play and imagination, because I couldn't have imagined how big an excavator could actually be until I saw a giant one in front of me.
Yeah. Do you have a technique? Obviously, you were saying that the idea for digging for dinosaurs came from your niece. By the way, does she know that she was the inspiration for these books?
She does. Okay. She thinks it's pretty cool.
Okay. She hasn't asked for royalties or anything like that.
No, not yet. Don't give her ideas. Shh.
Do you have a technique that you use to try to cook up new ideas?
I daydream a lot. I think that boredom is important. I think that when I let myself play on my phone too much, or even read too much, or get busy at the day job, and I don't let my mind wander, I notice that my creativity tanks. So sometimes I just stare into space, or, you know, try to go to bed a little early and try to daydream. Then I end up texting myself ideas. So I don't have any one perfect way of, like, here is how you cultivate the best, most marketable ideas. It's just pay attention to the world around you, because you never know when a little comment from a child will give you an idea, or when you'll have an epiphany because you're walking your dog but letting your mind wander.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that. Well, we should tell everybody where they can go to find out more about digging for dinosaurs and find out about all of the great books that have grown from your imagination.
So you can find my books at my website, which is www.junesmalls.com, and they're available anywhere books are sold.
We've had a great time speaking to the author of Digging for Dinosaurs, a great new picture book from our guest, June Smalls. Hey, June, thanks for being on Reading with Your Kids, and thank Summer for letting us use her office.
I will do that. Thank you.
We are so glad that you spent part of your day with us here at Reading with Your Kids. If this episode made you smile, and how could you not smile with Adam Wallace? I mean, he was a blast. Or if this episode gave you something to think about. And tell me, how did June Smalls not make you think? But please, pass it on. Share the link, leave a 5-star review, and hit that subscribe button so you can make sure that you don't miss a moment of Reading with Your Kids. And if you haven't done so already, please check out readingwithyourkids.com. It's the hub for all things Reading with Your Kids. You can find out how you can be a guest, join our Certified Great Read program, and explore amazing new books. We'd also love for you to connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, at Reading with Your Kids on Instagram, and at Jedley Magic on X. Of course, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/readingwithyourkids. Want to give a big heartfelt thanks to today's guest, Adam Wallace. Please be sure to check out Hat Man and check out Turkey in Disguise. Also want to thank June Smalls. Please be sure to check out Digging for Dinosaurs. I want to thank my incredible team, Fatima Khan, Chris Daugherty. I want to thank my absolutely beautiful wife for all the support and love she gives me. And of course, most of all, we want to thank you. You are helping to shape a kinder, smarter world. And you do that every time you read with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next episode of Reading with Your Kids.